Hello? Ah, there we go. I'm receiving many requests up here. can we open the windows? Is that possible?
We can do whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. May we? Yeah. If we could open the windows, that would be lovely. We can't have the doors open. And rats and snakes. Oh, those doors. They can be open. Sure. If. Yeah. Okay. So a snail walks into a police station. And says, I need to make a report. I was just mugged. And the police officers say, well, tell us what happened. And the snail says, well, there I was crossing an alley, minding my own business. And out of nowhere came these two big turtles. And they mugged me. And the police officer says, well, we're going to need a little more information. Can you tell us what they look like? And the snail says, I don't know. It all happened so fast. All right.
I don't get it.
You are almost free of me. And all of this bad, bad humor.
Yes. Oh, it happened so fast. I got it. Thank you.
So my intention at this point, I've left us lots of space to just be open and to feel into what's needed here. My intention was to have us do some outdoor walking meditation. And what I instantly heard is, we were just outside and it's really hot today. I'm wondering if that's a universal feeling in this room. Okay. All right.
There are no notes.
All right. We are definitely going to dig into some practice and some silence, but given that we, before lunch, did another parts work round, and we did it in a different way, in a more somatically oriented kind of spontaneous way, I do want to leave some space for a little bit more discussion on this, and it's an option to talk more about what I call the four dimensions of psyche, which is printed for you on your handout. So let's just leave the floor open, because one of the things that I've been really enjoying is how inquisitive everybody in this room has been throughout this course and how many questions there has been. So let her rip. All right, we'll go here and here. Thank you, Mike Guy.
I was wondering if you could speak to the concept of forgiveness.
Ooh.
Yeah, exactly.
Now that's a Buddhist joke.
Yeah. And where that plays into the boss, the enemy, the friend.
Ooh.
And if I've come from Catholic faith and, or, you know, growing up, not Catholic practicing, but, you know, the forgiveness was like, you know, you have to forgive, even if there's no acknowledgement of harm or no acknowledgement of action. And I'm just wondering where that plays into the parts work. And if there's any sort of technique involved in achieving forgiveness in the conceptual way, without the literal actions of forgiveness. And my definition of forgiveness is kind of acknowledgement of participation, acknowledgement of the hurt, like you were saying, the feel the feels kind of thing, and then, you know, changing your behavior. If those don't happen, can you still achieve forgiveness?
Is forgiveness dependent on the other person. Does anybody know how Jack Kornfield defines forgiveness? Since we're here at Jack's house, basically.
Not wanting a better past.
Yes, giving up hope for a better past. Right. And many of us wander through life wanting an apology that is simply never going to come. It's true. The Buddha called it the hot coal. Holding on to resentment is like holding a hot coal, you know. Same like when this iPad, you know, eventually dies. I could like be really mad at it. I could curse it out. In fact, I likely will. Right? iPad's not feeling a thing. It's still exactly. It's just as dead as it was before I got upset. Right? And the same thing with the people in our lives. We can hate them. We can be mad at them. We can resent them. They're not feeling that. I'm the only one holding the hot coal. Put down the hot coal. Now, it would be lovely if it were so easy. It would really be lovely if it were so easy. It's simply, it's, okay, so here we are in that terrain of like only you know, because there is a time when it is right to be pissed. There's a time when it's right to hold the resentment. There is a time when it's right to confront the other person, to let them know. There's a time when you shouldn't, when you need to just stay away. But I think forgiveness is an end game activity, and it has nothing to do with the other person, and whether or not they've repented. Because what you're what you're describing is the Christian definition of repentance, right? It's remorse with the intention to do differently. You know, for my dad who died in 2004, that opportunity is gone for him, and you know, that apology I waited my whole life for sailed away. But through, so here, more self-disclosure, yay. When I was in undergrad, I took an autobiography course, and I chose to write about my dad. my experiences with him growing up, my experiences as a Southern Baptist growing up, and some father figure stuff that went down in my church with my youth minister. And it was really painful to revisit all of that, to write it, to revisit it, to edit it, to eventually speak it in class, to share it. And this really funny thing happened right at the end of it, where I started thinking about how my dad must have grown up. 1930s rural Oklahoma. Southern Baptist community. Making hay bales from the time he was like 7 or 8 years old. Farmer family. What did discipline look like in that house? What did gender roles look like in that house? What did emotional intelligence look like in that house? What did, you know, thoughts on race look like in that house? What went on to make that guy the way that he was? And it broke my heart. Holding on to our pain is important. It's important to hold pain. There comes a time when it's time to put it down, and only you can know. Because the truth is that holding pain, while appropriate, will blind you to compassion. I didn't see that, and I couldn't have seen that until it was time, until I had processed enough. And it was very, very interesting that it came right at the end of this long memoir writing process that all of a sudden it hit me, oh my goodness, he wasn't just a schmuck. There's actually no such thing as bad people. There's actually no such thing as evil. Everybody's born with Buddha nature, gets roughed up by the world, and then lives out some derivative of that. And so there does come a moment when you have to say, the legacy stops with me. It ends here. The hurt that you, the hot coal you were holding, that you passed on to me, it doesn't get passed on to another person. You know? And I think when you're ready to say that, and when you've been with it long enough, and again, only you can know, there is just a moment where some softening becomes available, right? Where maybe something somebody says, or something, a line that you read in a book, or you know, even an inspirational meme on Instagram, will be just the message that you need to receive, and an opening and an allowance comes, and you can recognize that me not forgiving you is actually only causing me harm, and that's it. And P.S., what the fuck happened to you to make you that way? Ouch, you know? But it's a process. It's nuanced, very, very nuanced and very subjective. Anybody have anything to add to that? I am definitely not the only wisdom holder in this room.
I think she asked for a way to work with the...
Yeah, how do you incorporate that into the parts work?
Into the parts work is... What I love about the parts work is it's complex but very simple. Right? The hurt parts just need to be loved. The defensive parts just need to become our friends. That's essentially the whole thing. And through that process, they begin to trust us. So, so there's the defensive part of you that's holding on to the resentment, that wants to make sure that that never happens again, right? That through some process needs to relax and come to see that you have the skills and the resources and the intentions to take care of yourself. And that if you need that other part of you, that defensive part of you, hey, I'll call on you, you know? Through that, you get access to the hurt. And through loving the hurt, that softening can come. It's... The way it actually will work for you will be more complex and more specific than that. But, you know, here in this context, it's, that's the way it would generally work. Actually, we need to come back here, and then we'll come over here next. So, yes. I'm getting the thumbs up back there.
Okay. This sort of goes off of your question about... I guess being raised Catholic, so I'm Catholic and I have like a lot of guilt, like all the time. And I don't know like if there's any like tips you have for, to sort of like, I guess it's sort of like a type of inner critic, but it's like even if I'm doing all I can, like there's like a voice inside that's like, well, actually you're not doing all you can, like you could do more, and then I'm feeling guilty. And it just kind of feels like a constant like barrier and just... Yeah, it's just, I think it's just something I've grown up with, and it's I'm like aware of it, but haven't like fully been able to like calm it down.
Yeah. Do you have a meditation practice?
No, I used to do like, I don't know if you've heard of Art of Living. I used to do like that type of breathing, but I've sort of, I'm trying to just get back into it now.
Yeah. You know, a lot of what is coming up for folks in the room, And it really, in IFS language, we would call it self-energy. In Buddhism, we would call it the moment when the mind actually calms down, right? The moment when our parts relax and the deeper wisdom kind of emerges like the sun from behind the clouds. The gift of mindfulness meditation, staying with the breath, returning from distraction over and over again, is the fancy word is cognitive flexibility, Right? Your mind comes becomes both strong and flexible. And the reason why I would encourage everyone in this room to build that kind of practice if you don't have that kind of practice is because the discernment that gets sharpened and the, you know, how quick how one becomes able to catch these patterns quicker and quicker and just relax out of them. You could do the work that I've been describing and that we've been doing together. There's so many different ways to come at that, right? But at a certain point, too, this is simultaneously true. Just like, you know, there's geometry and there's calculus. And they're both true, you know, at the same time, and they don't conflict with one another. But if you tried to do geometry according to calculus's rules, it wouldn't work, right? Just like that. Things simultaneously being true and different at the same time. That's just a story. It's just a story. There does come a point where we can just recognize that is just a story. Can I return to my body and drop down out of my head? Okay, I feel guilty about it. Sometimes I have a client now with really persistent anxiety. I mean, really. And she wants the tools. She has the tools. She texts me to remind her of the tools. And God bless her for being invested in the work. But there can be there's a way in which we can start to not fix it in order to fix it. You know what I mean? Not so I've been holding up not fixing it as the way. Right? Just allowing it, just holding it, just letting it be and feeling into it. And that's the way to healing, paradoxically. And then there's a way in which we can say, well, let me hold this and not try to fix it, but in the back of our head, so I can fix it. Right? So sometimes there's just the story in the head, and what we really need to do is just go to the body. And this client that I was mentioning earlier, you know, just recently I was like, you know, okay, so there's a story in your head, but I want you to feel the anxiety in your body. Yes, it's telling you all of these things, but feel it in your body. What does that feel like? It feels like A, B, and C. Okay, so now tell me, which one is easier, in the body or in the head? In the body. Every time. Every time. Every time. So maybe just feeling it in your body and just having, you know, the cognitive flexibility to drop the story and just be with what's real. Yeah. All right, so we got one more.
Who's the person over here?
And then... Okay.
So my question is, I can imagine that sometimes if you've had a very fresh trauma or something that still feels very, very strongly, it might be difficult to do the parts work and you might feel emotionally overwhelming sometimes. And I wonder if there's a time where it's useful to take some space before start trying to process.
Sure.
And if there's a time where it's not. And I guess the second part of the question is kind of, when do you think about processing emotions as something that you kind of address directly and you try to approach it and dive deeper into it? And when do you kind of let it pass? And, you know, because emotions do always pass. So when is it kind of heads on and when is it kind of moving on?
I agree. There are times when you just need to have space. There's times when we need to just freak out. I mean, come on. Mindfulness, but, you know, it's like one of those, the unexamined life is not worth living, but if you're examining all the time, no, you know, whereas Jack Kornfield would say, you know, there's a time to, you know, look and inquire and to be present, then there's a time to just live. And I'm not an advocate for just being, like, purposely self-aware and totally skillful all the time, you know? So sometimes you just need to, like, act out, or it's appropriate to, or you just want to, and fuck it, you're not causing any harm, you know? Or you just need to take space. So, yeah. In terms of how to tell, I think you weren't here when I talked about how there's a scale, you know, from 0 to 10 of emotional intensity, and that, like, when we're 7 and up on that scale, you know, and that's what I would call the freak out zone, right? When we're really losing it and it's really intense, that's when we want to do something to calm down. And 7 would be my growth edge, what I would hold up as the growth edge, because we all have what's called a window of tolerance, and it's different for each of us. Window of tolerance is basically your comfort zone, right? How much stress can you handle before you go outside of the window of tolerance? And over here, there's rigidity. We start to clamp down on our experience. We start to control. We start to impose rules, you know? Ever find yourself making rules for a lover based on what your ex did? Right. That's what we do. And then on the other side is chaos. So acting out sexually or with substances or, you know, or having a crisis. And so we always want to stay within the window of tolerance and then flirt with what's called the growth edge, you know. So if you're at the growth edge, the edge of that window of tolerance before the freak out, then you can work with it there. And when you do, you're actually growing your capacity to hold more and more stress. But if you're over that edge, then mindfulness is not the thing to do. Emotional processing is not the thing to do. There's something else that's appropriate for you to do. The Buddha was asked if he felt pain. And he said, more than you can even imagine. And it's considered that embedded in that response was his mind was so vast. That window of tolerance was just infinite for him. That he had space, there was room for the cries of the world that he heard, for all of that compassion to well up in him. But there's space for him to feel immense pain and to feel into the immense pain of not just, you know, a room, but like the whole world without being shook, without losing his center, without losing his joy. Right? And that to me is a model of how it could be and how I would like things to be. Just making room, constantly making room. And growing and growing the space of our minds, which again it's a vipassana thing, it's a shamatha vipassana thing, it's a mindfulness based meditation thing where you learn how to do spacious awareness practices. You expand the space into your body, you expand the space out into the environment. It's part of what's going on in loving kindness meditation when we're sending our blessings out to the world and to others, as we're learning how to expand our awareness. And it's metaphoric, but it's literal too, right? For the folks in the room who have a spacious awareness practice, you're feeling me, right? And so when I say space to hold it all, that's what I mean. It's like a vastness of consciousness that we can literally grow so that we can hold more and more without losing our upeksha, our equanimity, our balance, right? Yeah. Again, it's different for each of us. Are we good? What's that? Okay. So I do want to practice and just relax, but we'll have an hour of that later. So just trying to feel into what's needed. Did you have a question?
No, it was a comment.
Sure. Can we pass the mic?
It was on forgiveness. I thought I'd share, and I think it was Jack Kornfeld that may have said this. It was a forgiveness meditation that I was doing quite a bit, and he was talking about a guy that had interviewed two prisoners of war. I don't know if you guys have heard this, but I think they were Korean War prisoners, and he asked them both the question, you know, did you forgive your captivate your enemies, and one had replied, "Yes, I did. I forgave them for all the atrocities." And the other one said, "No, I will never forgive them." And the reply was, "Well, then you are still in captivity."
Mm-hmm.
And that was very interesting. Mm-hmm. And also, I just wanted to comment on your mention of the DNA as far as, you know, your father. Thank you for sharing that. And I had heard also that, you know, it could go multi-generational in what you were talking about,
yeah.
As far as, so even if you said, oh, my mother was a lovely person and my dad was great to me, but what about your grandparents or your great-grandparents? And that, I think, opened up some stuff for me when you talked about the DNA, mm-hmm. at that level of, mm-hmm. you know, hey, on the outside, you know, circumstances were great.
Yeah.
But your suffering may have come from generations prior.
This is why we still owe African Americans reparations, quite frankly. 40 acres and a mule never happened.
Right.
And that had an effect on that generation. And then that was passed down to their kids. And then all of that affected the way that those kids parented when they grew up. And on down the line, you know. Yeah. There's still healing that needs to be done, and there's, you know, and then there's a conservative backlash of like, well, that happened in the 1800s, and it's like, no. We still live in a racially segregated society. I mean, come on, you know, but yeah. Worst trickle down effect in the universe, right? All right, last one, and then we're going to dive in for practice. All right, thank you. Thank you.
Feeling a little anxious about putting this out there, but just as we were talking about forgiveness, I was making a list of people I'm really, really pissed at.
Double-sided or single-sided?
Well, and I guess I kind of want to just speak for this part that's coming out big, you know, which is anger. And I often get very confused in the spiritual practice around how to not bypass anger, because I love the idea that forgiveness is an end product or an end result. But I can't go from hurt to forgiveness, I guess, is what's showing up for me. And in my culture, I was also raised Irish Catholic, and I would say in American culture, anger is this very disavowed thing. And I've had this angry part that came out today, and it was saying so many things that you were saying, like, you know, there's an end point to therapy, and why am I doing all this work? Nobody else in this gang is doing this work. Why am I doing all this work? I don't want to do any more work. And I know I'm ranting a little. Just bear with me. This goes somewhere. And
you're fine.
You know, I haven't been able to do yoga for 3 years. Every time I try, I start to cry. This angry part came out. I am awake at 2:30, and all that's coming up is, let's go do some yoga. Like, this is an energy that has value and meaning and a path. And I'm not looking for forgiveness. I'm going to really make space for this angry part, and I might be a little pissy to some people, and I'm also kind of enjoying anticipating that, but
Oh, the secondary gain of anger. It feels juicy. Fuck you. Yeah. So fun, right?
You know, I just kind of wanted to put that out there because it doesn't come up a lot. You know, it's just what is the place of anger in this arc of spiritual evolution and self-awareness and yeah, it's just a part that's up for me that I'm just saying, okay, come on, great.
Yeah. So, wait, did you have a question?
Well, and just, you know, I just also, just especially for women. So, you know, so I'm just, I guess, naming that in this 3-day process, you know, when I've gotten in touch with a lot of stuff, but really what's come up is this angry part that wants to be seen and wants to be heard, and suddenly there's space for it, and I feel like I've spent all this time and energy and attention on these other parts, my hurt part, my this part. I'm pissed.
Be pissed.
And,
you
know,
pissed.
I need to
let it come.
Yeah, I just need to be with that, and what's the question? I don't know, where is the conversation around anger in this process? And it's too big a question, I know, for this room or this particular venue, but God, I hope I have a question here somewhere.
While you're thinking of it, I'll just mention something, a little PSA here. I don't have all the answers, in case it wasn't painfully obvious, you know?
I guess I just, what, you know, what would your commentary be on sort of, I feel like what I'm being taught is the path is get in touch with hurt and then move to forgiveness. And for me, what I'm experiencing here today is my path seems to be, I've been in touch with the hurt for quite a while. I'm really sick of that piece. Nowhere near ready for forgiveness, and it seems like anger is what's bridging that gap for
me. But do you hear how much resistance is in what you just said? I'm so sick of that beast, right? So here's the other thing that I find so elegant and refreshing about the parts work, and I know it's natural. Of course you are. Of course you are. It makes so much sense. It's been plaguing you. It's uncomfortable. It's keeping you up at night. It's keeping you from your yoga practice. Of course. And I'm wondering if that resistance might be able to relax, and for you to just let the anger in. Fuck spirituality. We'll be angry. There are times when it's so appropriate to just say, this is how it is. And be with it. Look into it. Look into its eyes. You know? But without that resistance, the resistance is just fanning the flames. Even though, and I'm not invalidating the resistance, both are true at the same time.
I just think I need to make space for both, not just the one.
Sure.
And if it comes back to a question, the question is, I just find that that's a missing conversation in this process.
Yeah.
In the bigger arc of the process of evolution, of exploring spirituality, of coming to forgiveness,
absolutely,
both with self and with others.
Absolutely. I don't doubt for a second that there's a point to this. I know. And I get the laugh, but I don't doubt for a second that there's something here for you. There's something for you to see, there's something for you to learn. There's an awakening afoot. It's just feeling into it. Yeah, in such a way that the door finally opens, you know? And I can't tell you what that is. You know, I can offer some practices and some ideas.
I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not sure even that I'm asking that.
I guess it just
was like anger is in this mix in moving from hurt to forgiveness somehow. Yeah. And yeah. I wanted to speak for it, I guess.
Yeah. So, you know, I think Adi Ashanti would say something similar to this. And Gangaji, who we were talking about yesterday. Do you all know who Gangaji is? A really beautiful non-dualist saint who's living on the planet now, who comes from the lineage of Ramana Maharshi. If anybody knows who he is, very, very famous, very important non-dualist saint from India. Jack Kornfield studied with Ramana Maharshi's student, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. And references him sometimes in his talks. And so anyways, Gangaji is in this lineage. And what she would say, and this is possible, I firmly believe, from experience, that no matter what, the spaciousness and joy of the universe actually surrounds you. That no matter what we're going through, all the space, even on a physical level, 46 billion light years of cosmos surrounds us, right? And that which we struggle with will always pale in comparison to the magnificence that we are presented with in this life, you know? So that's also true. And, yeah. So I think you're on the right, you've got the right idea when you say making room.
I'm just having a slightly making more room. Mosaic experience.
Yeah. Yeah, you're giving birth to something. You're having the contractions. You're having the labor pains. It sucks. There's okay. Well then.
Yeah. Good.
Mm-hmm. Good. All right. Let's have some quiet time. Yeah. I feel like there's been so much instruction. That I'm just going to ask you to feel into your body and find your breath. The way that feels most natural and the most like a letting go, a lightening to you. But do find your breath. Do be in your body. Because in about 10 minutes, there will be some more instruction. So, working with the breath, feeling it in the nose, the chest, or the belly. The first thing, other thing that I want you to notice is that you can hear me and feel the breath at the same time, if you relax about it. The sound of my voice and the feeling of your breath are not competing. They can go together. You don't have to work at hearing me. It would be a billion times harder to not hear me. Vibrations of sound are just coming in. Without any effort at all. So breathe and just listen to the ambient sounds of the room. Big sounds. Small sounds. And notice that even though your eyes are closed, you're still seeing. Colors dancing across the backs of your eyelids. Hues of purple and black. You can just take those in too. You don't have to shut them out to feel the breath. All while this is going on, there's also the sense of air touching your skin. Butt on chair. Feet on ground. Notice that you can feel outside of your body as well. So, still in touch with the breath, with a light touch. Just notice that you can feel the space to your left. You can maybe even feel the bodies in space. You can sense where the wall and the windows are to your left. Same goes for the right. Just check that out. How you can be here breathing and open your mind to the left, to the right. Feel the space in front of you. Awareness doesn't end at the perimeter of the body, it extends out. You can feel the space behind you. Of you. It's like a circle with a tiny dot in the middle of it. Your breath is that dot. Your attention on it. But the whole of your mind, of your awareness, is like that circle. You don't really have to work at sensing the space. It's just there, like the sound of my voice. So try this for some time. The dot and the big, open, expansive, very relaxed circle. If it doesn't make sense, let it not make sense. If you can do it for a nanosecond and then you lose it, let it be. If you go into some story, just come back. There's room for those stories. There's room for not knowing. There's room. There's room. Whatever you're feeling, there's room for that too. Without dredging up a really big emotion, just however you're feeling right now. Whether you feel cooked or tired or energized or sad or happy or angry or whatever. Let that be part of the dot. Part of what's immediate. And just see if it's possible to open your mind up around it. takes kindness and it takes relaxation to do that. It's not forceful. Allowing whatever's going on with the dot. Putting it in a big space of mind. Just relaxing here. So while you have your mind opening or practicing, allowing the mind to expand, consider all the bodies in this room. There's around 50 of them. Be willing to contemplate that there is a struggle going on in each of these bodies that you know nothing about. Be willing to step outside of your own drama, your own story for a moment, your own reality for a moment. Just send out some love. May each of us find what we're looking for. May each of us open the great heart of loving kindness. May each of us be healed. May each of us be happy. May each of us find what we are looking for. May we all open the great heart of loving kindness. May each of us be healed. May each of us be happy. Open your mind further. Consider all the folks downstairs practicing in the great hall, all the folks in the office and the gift shop doing their thing, and all the other people on the grounds here. All with a struggle, a great struggle that we know nothing about. And even the plants, and the insects, and the animals. All struggling to survive and to be nourished, to stay away from harm and predators. How much longing have these grounds experienced in the last 5 years? Longing for rain. May all these beings find what they are looking for. May they be held in the great heart of loving kindness. May these beings be healed. May these beings be happy. Open your mind. Go beyond Spirit Rock. Out into the North Bay. Out into the East Bay. Out into the city. Don't forget Treasure Island. All of the marine life. All of the life occupying the airspace. Already we are talking about countless life forms who feel and thus struggle in some way. Already we are talking about countless beings who will never figure it out. Doesn't that just break your heart? So for them, may each of us find what we're looking for. May each of us be held in the great loving kindness. May we all be healed. May we all be happy. Opening further. Northern California, Southern California, United States, infinite life forms, Canada, Mexico, South America. Whoosh. Including Europe and Asia and Africa and Australia. The beings in Antarctica, the North Pole, all of the ocean space, all of the airspace. See before you, feel in your heart an entire planet teeming with life. All struggling in some way, in ways we cannot imagine. May everyone find what they're looking for. May all beings feel held in the great heart of loving kindness. May this world heal. May we all be happy. What would that be like, as the Occupy Wall Street slogan went, another world is possible. Can you imagine a world filled with healed people? Where we trip over ourselves to help one another, where there's no war, where there's no greed. The world is possible. We shall take a break and meet in the meadow at 3:30.
We're going to clear the room. Put the chairs either on that side or this side and the cushions away, please, before you go to the field. Right here, or take it to the field with you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.